Hi, my name's Chris Scott, and this interview was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For the latest news and terms and conditions, go to ukwineshow.co.uk. Hi, my name's Chris Scott, and I'm here with Paul Symington. How are you, Paul?
I'm doing well, thanks.
Excellent. You're from the Symington Family Estates.
That's right.
You own a lot of the big port brands, so you are a man who knows port in Portugal very well.
A little bit.
What we're going to do today is just talk a wee bit about the history of Portugal, but maybe try and unpick the different regions in Portugal as well. You said originally, last week when we interviewed you, a lot of the wines in Portugal are stored in Oporto.
Yeah, yeah.
What's the reason for that to start off with?
Well, it's a historical accident, really. I mean, this is the only great wine region on earth where the place it's stored and aged is 100 kilometers away from where it's grown.
Yeah.
And this is purely because of this giant river, which is carved a path through this huge mountain range down to the coast, and the wine was always made in the Douro, and they'd ship it down to Porto. It was the only way to get it to the markets, and so the cellars grew up in the southern part of the city of Oporto to age the wines to be reshipped, and then so when they made the rules about making port and shipping port, they had to make rules about what was already de facto, you know. So yeah, we have this rather curious a separation of the two roles. It complicates our lives a bit, but that's the way it is.
Because some of the wines are aged in the Douro. If you think of things like Tawny Ports,
yes,
they're often aged in the Douro because it's quite hot and that speeds up the aging process.
Exactly.
But in Porto, it's a lot wetter, isn't it?
Humid and less hot in the summer and less cold in the winter. So some of our Tawnies we age down in Gaia to get that balance, the maritime climate, and some we age in the Douro because, as you've just said, we have temperatures touching 40 degrees in the shade in the summer,
yeah,
and hovering around zero in the winter. So you have a much bigger contrast than the age. But if you age all your wines in the Douro, you get much more caramelized, and too much of that, they become too syrupy. Of course, nowadays you can put aircon in, or you can build your cellars higher up. On the edges of the valley, you're up at 500-600 meters, and you don't have so much of the intense heat.
Oh, okay. So are you aging more in the Douro or more for the Tawnies?
Yes, we are now. But we like to keep a balance of the two. I think total aging in the Douro, unless you run a lot of aircon, which obviously has its impacts on global warming, is not something that to be advised. So we try and do a balance of the two.
Okay. So port itself is divided up into sort of three key regions. From my understanding is that the Douro Superior, which is the most inland area near Spain, that's quite recently been planted.
Yeah.
But closer to the coast, it was a bit more older planting. Do you want to just give us a bit of a history about why people moved inland over time?
Yeah, the original wines from this region were planted, but the monks are usually the culprits in these things. and they were great making wine around Rego and Lamego, and so the monks and the merchants arrived there and just bought this wine from the lower Douro, what we call the Baixa Corgo, the western side.
Is that the Baixo Cargo?
Exactly, yeah.
And that, if I get the pronunciation
no,
right.
No, you haven't at all.
How do you pronounce it?
Baixo Corgo. But that's just on the lee of this giant range of mountains. Between Oporto and the Baixo Corgo, there's a giant range of mountains that goes up to 1,400 meters. That's higher than Ben Nevis, for anybody who's British to this. It's higher than the highest mountain in the British Isles. It's a huge range of mountains. At Porto, we have 47 inches of rain a year, which is 1,100 millimeters a year. It's a very wet area on the coast. We have the Atlantic just blowing straight in. Over the range of mountains, the rainfall drops to nearly half, and that has a profound impact on these wines. So the merchants originally went over to get wine from the Baixo Corgo. Nice wines, fresh wines, quite high yields, still in the rain shadow. And that's what, going back into the 17th century, that's where the wines originally came from. What happened was, as the demand grew for these wines, people started moving further east and thought, lower yields, lower rainfall, hotter, but very interesting wines. So around the mid-1700s, people started moving further east to the Cima Corgo, Baixo Corgo, Cima Corgo, because there's a little tributary of the Douro called the Corgo. So it means below the Corgo, above the Corgo.
Oh, so Baixo
is being below the Corgo, and Cima above the Corgo.
Oh, okay, yeah,
and
yeah.
And a Cima Corgo wine began to fetch higher prices here in London, in Brazil, in northern Germany, where port was shipped to. And so the Upper Douro, or the Cima Corrigo, became the place for the real quality wines. And today, the sort of more ruby quality wines, the standard quality wines, are basically come from the Baixo Corrigo, and the premium wines come from the Cima Corrigo. Very, very low yields. I mean, we get about 22 hectares per hectare up there. It's very, very low. Bordeaux's probably 45 to 50. Champagne's 100 hectares per hectare. We're 23 hectares per hectare.
So what's the climate there? Is it drier and
drier
and hotter?
Drier and hotter. And much lower rainfall. At Pingyang, where we have Dao's Quinta de Bonfim, the average rainfall is about 700 millimeters a year. And then you move into the eastern part that you mentioned earlier, which is called the Douro Superior, which is only about 400 millimeters of rainfall a year. I mean, there are places in North Africa with more rainfall than that.
Yeah.
So that we're farming in semi-desert up there.
But you do have rivers, so you've got as much irrigation as you need?
Well, not really. There's not enough water in the river to if we all pump water out of the river, it would be dry up in a year. There's a bit of irrigation, but the whole Douro region, I would say 95% of the Douro is dry farmed. There's a bit of irrigation. We always water the young vines. They wouldn't survive through a summer otherwise. But I think mass irrigation is impossible in the Douro. And in fact, it would destroy the river. So we're actually not in favor of irrigation, apart from in a few very selected areas.
And the Douro Superior, again, you said further inland, lower rainfall. But you're getting quite close to the Spanish border, aren't you?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
You can't. Is the move to keep moving inland? Because that seems to be the...
I think that what will stop the highest area of production is the lower Douro, and then the middle, the Cima Corrigo, is the area of the greatest quality focus. And then the eastern Douro is producing fabulous wines and some very, very good Douro DOC wines. But it is a very tough environment up there. And if you don't have water, you're going to have a real problem. And I think increasingly water will be a problem for those vineyards up there.
What about electricity? Because one of the limitations a long time ago in Portugal and in the Jura itself was the lack of electricity. Have you got power all the way through now?
We do now. But, I mean, we still have a big generator. The thing, it looks like the half the size of a 40-foot truck, which is parked by a winery, because until recently, the dam power just conk out in the middle of the harvest, which is a bit of a nightmare, as you probably know. So we have a socking great generator, which, thank God, it just sits there now. We don't often have to use it. But yeah, the power was a big issue in the Douro until relatively recently.
One of the ways they used to deal with that was they'd have a lot of processes that didn't need electricity.
Exactly
people
right.
People talk about auto vinifiers.
Yeah,
is that
yeah,
the ones
yeah,
where
yeah,
the,
yeah.
the CO2 from the fermentation used to drive the wines up a pout to pump over effectively?
Exactly. And the original treading, which we still do in some places, was partly a necessity because the only way of extracting color from the skins of the berries was to tread because there was no possible use of power. Over time, then, in the early 60s, auto vinification was introduced. And as you say, that was a very effective way of pumping over the juice over the cap to get color and flavor out without having to use power.
Yeah, exactly. And is power used a lot now? Is things like pumping over? And I've seen people talk about mechanicalized feet, really.
Yeah. Well, we were one of the pioneers on the mechanized feet. We had a prototype running in 1998. And now we have five wineries with some of these working alongside often the traditional foot treading. And they're making really fabulous wine because they don't look as romantic, but they're expensive. They're expensive pieces of kit. But we love them because they make such good wine. And the Douro used to be a place to go and see ancient history. People, if you were doing your WSET or your MW or whatever, studying what people would say, go to the Douro, you'll see wine as it was made in the 19th century. And now we can actually show wine being made as it was in the 19th century and earlier, treading by foot. But you can also see some really modern kit. And I think that's the fascinating thing about the Douro, is you can actually see some incredibly advanced equipment and also some really fabulous old historic things happening as well.
One of the things that's happened or a change over time has been the way the vineyards have been terraced. They used to be terraced with big
stone, dry stone walls.
Dry stone walls and kept relatively flat. and then you'd plant your grapes there, and then you'd have a big step down to the next.
Exactly.
What was that called? I can't remember.
Terraced walls, sucalcos in Portuguese.
Was it called?
Sucalcos in Portuguese.
Sucalcos, yeah.
And dry stone wall terrace, stone terraces. But they're beautiful. I mean, don't forget, we farm in the largest area of mountain vineyard on earth. There's over 40,000 hectares in the Douro with an average incline of 30%. There's nowhere on earth with so much mountain vineyard, not even the Alpine vineyards in Switzerland or the Moselle in Germany. And that brings a lot of problems, erosion, expense of building the vineyards. So what happened was when we started planting new vineyards in the early 80s, we had to find another way of doing it, because it was simply impossible to build those dry stone walls.
So and
maintain them. So we use earth banks now, and we carve out contour terraces. And where it's not too steep, we actually plant up and down, what we call vertical vineyards. But of course, that allows the water to run straight down.
Yeah.
So we've had to adapt. I mean, in the past, any vineyard which wasn't completely clear of weeds was considered a crap vineyard. And now we actually plant grass between the rows to stop the erosion. Yeah. So it's been an interesting... Nobody had a textbook. We had to learn as we went along.
The name of that is it?
Vinho Alto. Exactly. Vinho Alto means the up and down vineyards. Yeah.
And can you mechanize that?
Yes, you can. Yes, you can.
So you can... Mechanization is quite common in the Douro now?
Well, only for the pre-pruning and for the spraying, but not for the picking. The whole of the Douro, there's no mechanized picking at all in the Douro, whereas most other regions, a great number of the grapes are picked by machine. It's all picked by hand. The pruning's all done. Well, it is everywhere, but done by hand. But yeah, we have a lot of challenges in the Douro. It's a very expensive area to grow grapes.
The other method they used for doing the walls was...
Patamares,
What's that?
Those are the earth banks. Those are the contour banks.
Oh,
so we do Vinho Alto, which is planting up and down, where it's not too steep.
Yep.
But if it's too steep, the erosion's horrendous.
Yeah.
So we plant Patamares, which means a contour terrace, and planted with an earth bank. But the earth bank obviously occupies a lot of space and has its own erosion problems. But those are what we call contour terraces.
As you've moved into the Douro over time, does that mean that the old parts of the Douro, the Cima Cargo, is that more one style of terracing or the other, like Douro Superior?
The Douro Superior is mostly now earth banks, because there wasn't a lot of vineyard there in the old days. But the lower Douro, the Cima Corrugu, has got a lot of stone terraces. And luckily, they're now grants for maintaining them, because it would be every winter, some of these fall down.
Yeah.
If you have a really wet winter, however much you care for your vineyard, you're going to have stone walls, and we have to put them back up again. And that's a very expensive process. So we try and maintain them as long as possible.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. It makes sense. Okay. All right then, Paul. I think we're going to wrap it up there. Thank you very much for your time.